Let me ask each of you. I'll start with you, Joe. Do you expect during this primary next Tuesday that anyone's going to come out of nowhere in any of these races to win?
Well, it depends what you mean by nowhere. I think
not expected. Let's say someone that's really unexpected winner.
I think the big toss-ups are going to be on the Republican side. For Secretary of State, which is State Senator Will Krause, and Jay Ashcroft, who's a lawyer in St. Louis, but the son of the John Ashcroft. He's been campaigning on his name. Krause has been trying to, last few days on TV, kind of throwing a little mud on that. Lieutenant Governor, you've got Mike Parson, who's a rural state senator, versus Bev Randles, who's a Kansas City lawyer and who's pretty much wholly funded by Rex Singfeld and David Humphreys. She's the one consensus candidate of the two biggest donors in the state Republican Party. So, I mean, those races haven't got as much attention as the attorney general's race and the one that's blocking out all the sun, which is the Republican contest for governor. But I think those are where there is more potential for surprises.
All right. Let me take to Dave Robertson, same question to you, then we'll go to Reed.
I don't think I'd be surprised by any of the candidates winning the Republican nomination. It's pretty close, though it looks like the outsider.
For governor, are you talking?
For governor, I'm sorry. And outsider candidates certainly have an advantage, it looks like, from the polls. Eric Greitens and John Bruner seem to be ahead in the Survey USA poll. Looks like there's a really hard to predict race for attorney general. Attorney general, like Secretary of State, are very, very important posts, and whoever gets those has a lot of potential to influence lots of different kinds of things. In the Secretary of State's case, elections, in the case of the attorney general, some Republican attorney generals have used this as a launching pad for attacking lots of different federal policies.
And that's been a nasty race. We'll get into that in a moment. Joe is waving her hand.
I want to make one thing perfectly clear, because there's a few polls floating around out there. Polls and primaries are so unreliable. You have to be really careful. In 2012, there was a whole bunch of polls the last week of the election, and it looked like John Bruner was going to win the Republican nomination for the U.S. Senate in a walk. And we know what happened there. Right. He ended up losing and actually was in third behind Aiken. So you never know, because primaries hinge so much on who turns out. There's no major ballot initiatives or other things to really drive out turnout this time. So it's going to be real strange, because you could have a very low turnout on next Tuesday, and that could affect everything.
So sometimes the best poll in these situations is how much money is being raised. Who's raising the most money? Is that right?
Well, it would be if it wasn't for the fact that this year in particular you're seeing – okay, Missouri has no campaign donation limits. That's been the case for 8 years. But this year in particular, you're seeing these outrageous donations of $1 million, almost $2 million that Greitens got less than a week ago. So that can like skew things overnight. You've got Missouri Attorney General Chris Koster, the Democrat, who's sitting on almost $11 million. That edge could disappear overnight. Somebody could write whoever wins the Republican nomination for governor a $10 million check. Previously, they wouldn't do that because they think that seemed too unseemly. This year, I don't think they do. I would not be surprised to see a huge check on August 3rd, the morning after the primary.
Before I take a break, let me go to Rachel and get you in on this. Do you expect your focus is more on the city in this region?
Mm-hmm.
You expecting anybody to come out of nowhere?
I don't know that there is sort of a favorite in any of the races that I'm looking at to say if anyone is going to really come out of nowhere, per se. I'm curious about the governor's race. You would think that Kinder, with his name recognition, the fact that he's been in a statewide office, it would seem to me, again, with Joe's caveat that polls are unreliable for a primary, that he's underperforming where you would expect him to be as, you know, the Republican standard bearer in the state for so long.
Well, that's why I say you can't trust that, because I personally think that Kinder's strength among the base is stronger than what that shows. Now, it doesn't mean he's going to win. And it depends also who they poll. often in these polls, I mean, they go for registered voters. And frankly, at this point, you need to get likely voters, which is a subset. And if your sample's not big enough, it can really be crazy. Now, for the city races, one thing I do want to say, most of the city races are the Democratic primary.
Mm-hmm.
The Democratic primary is likely to have even a lower turnout.
Sure. Yep. Yep.
So in the city races especially, I think turnout is going to be so low that it's going to be the candidate who has the strongest ground game, who literally gets door to door, grabs people by their collar, throws them in a car, and takes them to the voting
booth. I want to talk about one of those city races, which we're calling one of the marquee mm-hmm. races, in just a moment. I have to take a break. With me in studio, Joe Manis, Rachel Lipman, and also Dave Robertson from UMSL. Back in a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. And welcome back. We'll continue our conversation looking ahead to the Missouri primary. Well, I mentioned in the headlines, let's get to that right now, about the gathering tonight involving the first district congressional race. Anybody have any thoughts about that? Is Lacey Clay safe and secure? You will be covering it. He seems secure. People running for re-election in Congress have about, a 98% retention rate?
Well, he got helped a little bit when the president,
of all people,
Obama, came out with an endorsement yesterday, which told you two things. A, Clay wanted to reinforce how he's close to the president, who's such a popular figure. And B, some people think, well, if you got to do something like that, you must be a little concerned, or are you trying to drive it home? I mean, there's two ways of looking at it. In fact, Senator Chappelle Nadal tweeted as much yesterday when it came out, saying that she wasn't surprised. So, but you don't know what that impact will be. Again, as we've been saying earlier, turnout's going to be low, and I think especially on the Democratic side. And that may be something that concerns Clay a little bit, although he has shown 2012 was the big one when he was competing against Russ Carnahan for that seat, where all of a sudden, I mean, Clay overperformed what a lot of people thought, and it really affected down-ballot races. So that, in theory, could affect the city races that Rachel's watching.
Yeah, and how much of this, too, is just sort of like poking at at Clay's underbelly and trying to see, you know, if they can get another candidate or run someone else against him in another couple of years?
Dave, do you think that she is more formidable as a candidate than some of his more recent rivals? Carnahan included?
Carnahan was pretty formidable because he had a name that a lot of people knew. But Senator Chappelle Nadal has made a big impact in a lot of different issues on Ferguson, on hazardous waste. So, you know, she's known too. I suspect that Clay has a big advantage in this. And it could have an impact, for example, on the Attorney General's competition for the Democratic nomination. I don't know what kind of effect it's going to have, but right now they look pretty close, so it's just a little bit surprising. But I guess the two candidates, Hensley and Zimmerman, are not that well known.
Right. You mentioned the Attorney General's race. We have a caller who wants to bring up what a lot of people are talking about in connection with that race, and that is the animosity of the commercials and the rest of it. So let's bring Debbie from St. Louis into the conversation. Go ahead, Debbie.
Hi. I am trying to understand the vitriol, the animosity between Hawley and Schaefer. What's the history of that relationship, and who are the particular backers of each candidate, and why has it gotten so ugly? Thanks.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, first, Schaefer had announced that he wanted that job several years ago. And for a while, he didn't have a Republican opponent. Schaefer was able to mount up a little money. He was getting a lot of attention in Jeff City for his stuff on Planned Parenthood and other things, trying to bolster his conservative credentials, because when he ran the first time, regardless of what he said, he was going around saying he was a moderate. Okay. Then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, Josh Hawley, who's a professor of law at Mizzou and also is a protege of John Danforth, shows up, files, and he's also getting big money from David Humphreys, who's one of the the two big donors I mentioned. Rex Sinkfeld has put in money big time for Schaefer. So all of a sudden, it's become this mono-mono thing between A, the two big donors in the state Republican Party, B, Schaefer feels like, at least this is my perception, that what the heck? You know, he thought that he had it. He then challenged Hawley's leave that he got from Mizzou. So Hawley was offended by that. And so the result is that neither one of them feel any compunction about being polite. I mean, they don't care. And so that's one of the reasons you're seeing these ads, which both contend are somewhat inaccurate. But the other sides continue to run him because they don't care.
Yeah, the ads were talking about accusations of flirting with terrorists, and the other one is this Chinese commercial about farms, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I'll try to boil this down. For Hawley, and this started out, I actually first wrote about this last December when it first was coming up. Basically, Hawley, he used to be a clerk for John Roberts, who's Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. Hawley has also worked with this law firm, this conservative law firm, the Beckett Foundation, that has done various work on religious liberty cases. One of the cases they took was a group out of Iran that was on the terrorist list. They were trying to get it off because they felt that it actually had a lot of people who were pro-U.S. Now, I want to emphasize that this group has the backing of Kip Bond, Roy Blunt, other major Republican figures in Washington agree with this group that they shouldn't be on the watch list. Okay, well, Schaefer's been running ads about this anyway. And I mean, and the stuff on this group is several years old. Now, the other case, Hawley says he had nothing to do with, where the Beckett Fund represented an Arkansas prisoner who converted to Muslim and wanted to grow a beard. The Arkansas prison system didn't want him to grow a beard. He said it was for religious reasons. The Beckett Fund actually took it to the Supreme Court and won. Now, on one of the early briefs, Hawley's name was mentioned on it. The Beckett Fund has said that was an error because he didn't have anything to do with the case. Hawley says that's true, too. But Schaefer's been running this ad highlighting that brief with Hawley's name on it. Now, conversely, as a senator, Schaefer was among a number of senators who cast a vote in favor of loosening Missouri's ban on the foreign ownership of agricultural land. That is about 5 years old, and that was done because Smithfield Farms, who's a major pork producer, got purchased by a Chinese firm. And the governor signed it. There was a number of people on both parties who voted for it. But now this group, and I want to emphasize, these are not Hawley's ads. Nobody knows for sure who's running these ads. This is these are these groups who don't have to show their donors, and they're just running these ads going after Schaefer, saying he's a friend of the Chinese. I mean, well, that's what it's about.
Well, whoever financed the ads has offended the Asian American community. We know that. There's been a few stories written about that, that there is some offense there.
Yeah, and of course, those groups feel like you can't even find out who to talk to. Yeah. But for the most part, in some ways, attention is success.
Yeah, right, of course. Dave Robertson, we haven't really talked about the Senate race. And maybe one of the reasons for that is it seems pretty clear that Jason Kander and Roy Blunt are going to be the candidates.
It sure looks that way, and I don't think they will be challenged in a very serious way in the primary next week. But that'll be a real, real national fight. Once Kander and Blunt, as expected, if they win their nominations, a whole lot of people are going to put money into that because control of the Senate is at stake, and there's a little bit of vulnerability, apparently, for Blunt, partly because although he's been able to quiet the kind of Tea Party revolt within this state in his nominations for office, still there's a sense that as an insider in the Republican Party, which will certainly be one of the themes of Democrats, he's vulnerable to the kind of outsider impulse that seems so broad this year.
How much, though, do you really think that it's just noise of the fact that Kander is overperforming what people thought he would? And how much, and I guess, Joe, you can chime in here, too, if you have insight, is, you know, that there is legitimate sort of concerns with Blunt?
Well, I don't think there's much in the way of hard concern about specific votes, but I think there's a sense once someone looks like they could be vulnerable, everybody wants to see if they can exploit that. And that, I think, is what we're seeing here.
Well, and Kander, who's a veteran, has been playing up his veteran service. He was hammering Blunt a few months ago over the fact that Blunt, who is in my age group, did not serve in the Vietnam War and actually got a lot of deferments. Well, that hasn't been an issue in a while. Yeah. But Kander's been making it an issue. Kander also has been hammering Blunt over such things as like the Zika virus. Blunt had been playing up this compromise bill. Well, then this anti-Planned Parenthood stuff got tossed on it. The bottom line is that bill didn't pass. Congress went on vacation for 7 weeks. Mm-hmm. Kander started a bus tour yesterday that I covered where he's playing up that stuff, accusing them of being soft on ISIS and actually saying things that normally you would expect a Republican to say. Now, on the other side, it's pretty funny. Blunt is launching his own bus tour next week. And in fact, his camp says, well, we made our bus tour known for several weeks and Kander's just copycatting. And Blunt is highlighting cuts in federal spending. Well, you know, he's been a conservative guy on spending, but he hasn't been one of the flamethrowers like some of the other senators.
Right.
So you're real curious how that's going to play out. I think that contest is going to be the one that could potentially be most affected by how the presidential candidates perform in the state and if they even campaign in the state.
Right.
And that's going to be Trump, you know, Clinton. And
the other thing would be the disparity in organizations on the ground.
Yes.
If the Trump campaign doesn't have a very good ground game, certainly some of the social conservatives in Missouri can make up for that, but I don't think they can make up entirely for the kind of things you need to get votes out in the state.
Let me return to something we started to get on a little while ago, because Rachel and I have been talking about this for a couple of days, what so-called marquee race in the city, which is the circuit attorney's race.
Right. Absolutely.
You agree that that is the
race? Yes. I mean, it is basically the main, other than the city portions of whatever Senate districts, House districts, or et cetera, is up. Yes, that's the main city office up.
Does anything really separate these candidates?
It depends on what you're looking for, I think. They're all emphasizing their different varieties of experience. If you're looking for sort of the traditional, you know, prosecutor, career prosecutor, your candidate's going to be Mary Pat Carl. She's been in that office for 13 years, has actually picked up the endorsement of both Jennifer Joyce and the St. Louis Police Officers Association.
And the Post-Dispatch today.
Hadn't gotten a chance to look at that one yet. If you're looking for kind of reformer, sort of, you know, wanting to take the office in a different direction, there's sort of two candidates out there. Kimberly Gardner's picked up the endorsement of a number of different activist groups, and Patrick Homaker, who's also currently in the circuit attorney's office, although he's got a lot less experience than Mary Pat Carl does, he's got the endorsement of the Ethical Society of Police, which is the African American police officers organization. So they're kind of running more in the taking the office in a different direction, sort of a reformist bent. Homaker is really big on restorative justice, alternate prosecution. Gardner talks a lot about trust and rebuilding relationships between law enforcement and the community. And then Steve Harmon, who I think is probably the most outsider candidate, is running on this idea that he's got the management experience. He knows what it's like to be a police officer. So it's just going to depend on what you're looking for, really, in this race.
And Dave, when you split a race four ways or more,
you never know what you're going to get out of it.
Well, and also something that's important to remember is that while Republicans in the city can't actually necessarily put their own candidates in office, they can still play a role in these races. There's pockets in Southwest and sort of South Central St. Louis City, and they've got their own marquee races to worry about. I'm not sure they're going to want to pick Democratic ballots just simply to vote in Democratic races. And I think you're going to – or simply to vote in city-wide races. And I think you're going to see that impact the circuit attorney's race. And I think you're going to see that impact the sheriff's race.
Right. Yes. Because Joe wants to get in on this. But let's point out that this is the election
for
circuit attorney.
Yes.
It's tantamount to no Republican
There's no
candidate.
Republican candidate.
Jody, do you
want? I think what Rachel's saying about the ballot question is a big one, because often in the city you have had huge blocks of Republicans take Democratic ballots in a primary to have a voice in a city election, because there wasn't really a serious Republican voice. But you can only take one ballot on Tuesday, and you got to pick. And so because particularly the marquee race of governor, I think Rachel's exactly right. You're not going to have these huge blocks of Republicans in the city taking a Democratic ballot. And so that could definitely flex circuit attorney. And I could see where certain candidates, especially Mary Pat Carl, could definitely be affected because she is probably arguably the one who would most attract those kind of city voters. Yeah. So I think it's going to come down to who has the best ground game, really, yeah. I think, in that race.
And going back to sort of the whole how the Clay-Chappelle-Nadal race could shape things, Kimberly Gardner was on.
Don't forget Bill Haas.
Bill Haas. Kim Gardner was on Lacey Clay's float for the Pride Parade. So whether that's, you know, an endorsement or he's going to work his ground game for her. You've also got Maria Chappelle Nadal attempting to play a little bit in some down ballot Democratic races. And she contributed to Steve Harmon's campaign in the circuit attorney race. So there's a whole bunch of, you know, interlocking, interconnected, who's going to go out and vote for whom and who can get their ground game going for their candidates of choice.
Dave, I'll turn to you with regard to the other congressional districts. Haven't mentioned them, and probably because nothing's likely to change.
No. Not only is nothing likely to change, but nothing is likely to change in the House districts in the state of Missouri, across the whole state. I don't think anybody's even close to being vulnerable. Now, if there's a landslide for one candidate or the other at the presidential level, that could change, but I don't think it will.
I mean, there's interesting little, you know, fights between sort of the middle-of-the-road Democrats versus more progressive liberal Democrats going on in some of, like, the South City races. Mm-hmm. But again, those are going to be Democratic seats regardless of what happens. Right. So there's sort of sub-stories, but overall, I don't think anything changes.
Yeah, because the first district congressional fight is really the only one in the state in the primary.
Right.
You know, that's dealing with an incumbent. And so, yeah, you're likely to see more of an effect in the general. I mean, there's a couple of serious candidates in the general against incumbent congressmen, but in fact, you know, we've been getting pressure to do more coverage on those people, and it's kind of like after August 2nd. So after August 2nd, you will see stories about some of the general election contests.
Yeah, we
multiple elections in multiple months coming up.
Yep.
Our time is beginning to wind down, but one thing I did want to mention, simply because I'm curious about, you mentioned Jay Ashcroft and the Secretary of State's race on the Republican side. An old colleague of mine, Robin Smith, is running as a Democrat. I haven't heard a peep from Robin Smith since she announced.
Well, yeah.
And she could win.
Possibly. Now, okay, this is where it gets into drama. And I'm not knocking Robin Smith, who I've known for decades.
Sure.
But the fact is, she has not been campaigning heavily. She hasn't raised a ton of money. She's raised some. Now, when I was checking the last campaign report yesterday, there were all these ones that were due yesterday. Mm-hmm. I couldn't find hers. Now, it could be it had been slow by the Ethics Commission, so I'm not knocking her. But the point is that she hasn't been out there. She may be waiting for the general election. There had been a longstanding theory, and is that, see, the Democrats did not want this attorney general fight. And they were really hoping to get one of the candidates, I will not say which one, but I know, to run for Secretary of State and switch, like, before filing ended at the end of March. So they were holding off on getting any other big name in the Secretary of State primary on their side because they were trying to get one of these attorney general candidates to switch. Well, it didn't happen. There are a few other lesser-known candidates that Robin will face on Tuesday. And because she hasn't been mounting much of a campaign, there's always that danger that one of these fringe candidates could win because you haven't been out there. In fact, Koster hasn't really done that much. And I think that I wonder if he's going to run some ads at the end because, frankly, Jeff City officials tend to think that everybody knows who they are. Yeah. They don't.
And that name recognition is key. And nobody knows Robin on the other side of the state or beyond this mediator. We're going to have to wrap this up, but let me get a final comment from each of you, starting with you, Dave. What are you looking at? What are you going to be looking primarily at next Tuesday?
Well, I'll be looking at the Republican contest for the different slots and who's able to pull that off. And I'll be looking at the AG's race on the Democratic side. I think those are the most interesting races for me.
Any predictions on the governor's race, Republican side?
No, and especially not on the AG's race on the Republican side, where there's a lot of undecided voters even in the polls. And I've talked to Republicans who don't know who to vote for in their race.
Sure. Rachel?
I mean, obviously the marquee races we're saying, but sort of the ones that I'm concentrating on are there's a number of down lower ballot sort of party apparatus challenges going on. It's sort of the, I guess, the Bernie wing versus the middle of the road wing, if you wanted to say it, for committee men and committee women races in the city. And those have the potential to be important. They nominate aldermanic candidates to replace them. And you've got one alderman running for sheriff. You've got one alderman announced for mayor. You've got other aldermen who we know are interested in running for mayor. So there's the potential for these figures to play an important role if they get in there.
And they are important to the political system.
Absolutely.
No question about it. Joe, final thought?
Well, the obvious one's the GOP contest for governor. But part of it's because I really have a theory that certain ones of those candidates could really have an impact in November as far as whether or not they play up the outsider thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, because most of the Republican rank and file are suspicious of Eric Greitens. He could win.
Yep.
And he's gotten a lot of money, and he's run a very smooth campaign and has some – whether one likes his ads or not, people pay attention to him.
Yep.
And so I think you've got some in the Republican establishment, because I just came back from a week in Cleveland. So they're wringing their hands over who they might end up with at the top of their tickets, people that they don't know that well. It doesn't mean they're not good candidates, but it's just that they don't know that well. And on the other hand, I think Koster, I could see Koster facing serious challenges from certain ones of the governor candidates more than others. And I won't bore you with that till next week. But that, but I really think it's kind of like a chess game. And it's just interesting to watch to see who plays out. And I am curious to see if certain big names, because of family names, if that helps or if that means nothing. You know, it's interesting.
What a fascinating season it's been. And it's some season. It's been a year long already. But
more than that.
Yeah, yeah. Only a few months to go, folks. I want to thank you all so much for being with us. Wish we had more time. Joe Manis, great to see you back from Cleveland. Rachel Lippman, thank you so much for being with us once again.
Pleasure.
Dave Robertson, always great to see
you
too. Thank you very much. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.